You are listening to From Sobriety to Recovery with Jesse Mogul. Let's get to the show. Welcome back to From Sobriety to Recovery. I am your host, Jesse Mogul. I am in addiction recovery. I am on my treadmill because I got to get some steps in before the night ends. And we're going to rock and roll straight into the show. So we had some pretty awesome episodes as of late. I broke down how to construct new habits back in episode 286. Getting out of debt was 285. Been really working hard on that myself. I've gotten some great feedback about that. We're not done with that subject. That's absolutely going to be coming back. 284, prioritizing what you want most over what you want now. That was really an awesome continuation of mastery in the moment and just understanding that you are going to desire many things in your life. And if you always reach for the lowest hanging fruit, the easiest thing, the habit that you already told yourself you're sick and tired of, you're never going to end up achieving that life that you've always desired. This is like life coaching 101 stuff. This isn't even just addiction recovery stuff. The people who ultimately succeed and are the ones who get to have that life that they've always desired. And look, it could be fame, it could be riches, it could be the spoils of humanity. To each his own. I'm not going to sit here and judge what it is you desire from your life, but I am going to tell you that the likelihood that you achieve this, whatever your goal is, could be a loving family, it could be a fucking 10 Lamborghinis in your driveway and 17 bathrooms in your house, whatever you decide you want, that's your truth. And you go for it. Go for the gusto, because I can assure you that the Carnegies and the Rockefellers and the Elon Musks and the Steve Jobs of the world, they have definitely wanted something and they have striven every single day to achieve it. You do you. Don't let somebody else tell you what you should try to achieve in life. Because ultimately, if you listen to your parents or your siblings, your grandparents, your preacher, your teacher, you know, some random dude doing a podcast as he walks on a treadmill, if you let us decide what your life is going to be, what you should be doing with your life, one day you're going to look in the mirror and you may not be thrilled with the life that you created for yourself. And then who are you going to blame? You might try to blame somebody who told you to not strive for your greatest sense of self. Go for the accounting degree, because I promise you, you'll get a job when what you really wanted to be was a zoologist. It's, you know, you chose to listen to that advice. This is why, as an addiction recovery coach, I don't just give unsolicited advice. It's me asking a series of questions that help my clients dive inward and figure out what is it that they really want. What are the choices that they have before them that they may not even see? And then being able to elicit some self-discovery, some self-awareness, they can make a choice that matters to them in the moment, that feels congruent with what it is they're trying to achieve. And then we get them on that path through accountability, encouragement. But it's always up to you to take the action, to decide what it is you want to do, and then keep that word to yourself and push yourself to achieve it. I get it. There's a lot of people out there too saying, ease up, we don't work a work, you know, here's read this book and you only have to work 5 hours a week. I've read those books. I've come across those people who make those claims. It's just not true. Nobody's working 5 hours a week and is a millionaire. They're just not. They might be labeling work differently than some other people might, but I can assure you they're putting more than just 5 hours sitting in front of their computer or going out and having meetings. Like they're putting in the work. They're putting in the effort. And if they are, by some chance, by some caveat that I don't know everything and that the world is infinite and beautiful, that they are only working 5 hours a week right now and having that successful millionaire lifestyle, I can assure you at some point they were putting in a lot more than 5 hours a week. And it comes down to, what is your truth? What is the truth you want to strive for? And that's what we're going to talk about today in this episode, is your truth. Because what I've noticed in a few of the clients I have, and they're in the tribe. Most of the time, people are also in the tribe who are my clients. It just works out that way. And if you're interested in being in the tribe, which is my Voxer thread that I've created, this whole Voxer group where we go in, we support each other through our addiction recovery journeys, the ebbs and flows, the whole deal. It's a beautiful, beautiful little group of people we've created over there. You can go to jessemogul.com/askme, fill out the coaching form, answer some questions, and I'll make sure that we get on the horn and we talk to each other and we see if you're a good fit for what we're doing over here. Also, if you'd like to know more about coaching, you can do the same thing. jessemogul.com/askme. Hit that coaching button. See, I make it super easy. It's the same button. You just have to be willing to type in jessemogul.com/askme. Yes, I named the website after myself. I wanted it to be easy to remember. And one of the things I'm noticing multiple clients bring to me is, how do they discuss their sobriety and recovery with other people? How do they bring it up with coworkers, or maybe they're in a new relationship? How much information should they be telling somebody else about why it is that they're sober now? And this really came up in one of my client calls recently, because this person's like, you know, we're taught and we're told when we first get into sobriety and recovery, whether it's AA or Dharma or SMART or any of them, that it's very important to be truthful, to be honest with people. And that is absolutely positively true to a certain extent. Let me explain myself. Because we want to compartmentalize what it means to be honest and truthful to people. If you are blatantly lying to somebody about something that matters to them, that's important to them, hey, where were you? And instead of being at work, you were actually out with your friends at the bar, and you say, I was at work, that's a blatant lie. That's not copacetic with what we're trying to do when it comes to being impeccable with our word. Dom Miguel Ruiz, shout out for agreements. Being impeccable with your word means you're not intentionally deceiving somebody about something that directly relates to them, that has something to do about them. Now, let's just parking lot that one for a moment. Specifically, when my clients are asking me, well, what am I supposed to say to these coworkers when they've seen me drink, but now all of a sudden I'm not drinking anymore? And this is where it can start getting a little bit fishy. This is where we can start getting slightly confused, because we want to be honest with ourselves first and foremost. All right, we're going to stop drinking because we can't control that beast. Frick that guy. I don't want to drink anymore. But when you start figuring out ways to bring this up to coworkers, or to bring this up to random people you see at social gatherings that are having a drink and they're like, hey man, you want a beer? What's your response to that? Because I vividly remember this being a very important topic of conversation at Kaiser, both in the relapse prevention class and in the alcohol awareness class, where people were really stressed out about how they were going to talk to somebody about their sobriety. How much information were they going to tell someone about why it is that they don't drink anymore? And it's really important that you have thought about this before you get yourselves into those situations, because there's a lot of different ways that you can answer that question. Let's say it's with coworkers, because this is a direct thing that recently happened with a client. And they're like, hey man, we're all going out to the bar. You want to go? Now, in that moment, you could choose to be like, nah man, I'm good. I've got this thing I got to roll out and do. And then those people go to the bar and you're not there and you're not even associated with that event. So probably the conversation stops. But what if you actually say, yeah, I want to socialize with these people, so now I'm going to go to the bar, but I'm only going to drink soda water. But they've seen you drink beer before. Now, how much of your truth do you think these people deserve? How much of your truth should they be privy to? Because not everybody needs to know the horrors and calamity of your life that has led you to the decision to step into sobriety and seek long-term recovery. They don't need to know about all the blackouts. They don't need to know about all the bad things that you did to your friends or how many hearts that you broke. They don't need to know all of that, right? That's not something that you necessarily got to start pouring out to any old Tom, Dick, and Harry who asks you why you're not drinking anymore. So when I first got sober, I knew why I needed to get sober. The blackouts, the waking up in the shit tub. I mean, I once blacked out in Indonesia and woke up in Singapore, definitely blacked out in Bahamas multiple times. Whew. I blacked out in Eindhoven one time in the Netherlands. That was not a good time. Definitely blacked out in Belgium more than once. And those are just my foreign excursions, not to mention the thousands upon thousands of times I blacked out here in the United States. I got some fucking blackout stories. I got cars I've wrapped around telephone poles. I've got faces getting smashed up against the bottom of pools. I've done some stupid shit in my day. I knew all of those stories, but the other people don't need to know those stories. I might want to share those in a meeting, in a group where we're all sitting around and we're all seeking long-term recovery. That might be where I share those stories of all the times I almost paralyzed myself. But some random person at work saying, hey, man, you want a beer? And you just simply saying, no, I'm good. And they, really? I've seen you drink before. Why'd you stop tonight? Why aren't you drinking tonight? Oh, I'm good. I got something going on in the morning. The likelihood that somebody is going to continue peppering you with questions is generally minimal unless you're in a college environment where there's like kegs all over the place. I do remember being one of those people who would pepper someone with questions. Come on, just drink. Just have one. Come on, come on. But that had more to do with me and my desire to not be the only person around binge drinking. So I would just encourage everybody to binge drink with me. Now, if you want to step into a mature adult type situation, which I don't know where you're at in your journey, you might literally be going to a college campus and you might find that people are trying to push alcohol and drugs on you. And that says more about them than it says about you. A lot of people don't want to know that one of their good friends or somebody around them isn't drinking. It can, if it makes them uncomfortable, it's because a part of them is looking in the mirror, asking themselves, well, if this person doesn't need to drink to have a good time, why am I drinking? It causes them to turn inward, but they're going to project that outward. And they might say some whack shit to you. They might say some weird stuff behind your back. They might try to ostracize you or just continue to peer pressure you. These are all just going to be reactions to their emotions inside. And emotions are valid. Any emotion you have is valid because you're feeling it. The behavior, the response, your reaction to that emotion, that's where the invalidness starts to come to play. Because if somebody upsets you and you just start to yell and scream at them, it's okay that you feel disrespected or hurt or manipulated, whatever negative emotion you feel when somebody comes at you. But coming at them and yelling and screaming, maybe even swinging on them, maybe gossiping behind their back, trying to shame them for their behaviors, trying to rally people against them, that's not acceptable. So let's just be very clear. Emotions and feelings are valid. The behaviors are not always necessarily valid. You can choose to elicit a kindness towards them, and that still is valid only based off of the subjectiveness of your perspective. Some people might say, nah, man, that person disrespected me. I'd go over there and just clock them, just punch them right in the face. Well, that's not socially acceptable. We're not. Back whenever I was in grade school, I remember you could punch somebody and you get taken to the principal's office and you might get suspended for a few days. Nowadays, I really feel like you might go to jail for that or at least juvie, right? We live in a different world now. So feelings and emotions, valid. Behaviors, not necessarily valid. It's up to you to choose to act more maturely and self-aware. So when someone comes at you and starts asking you, why aren't you drinking? Now it's up to you to decide how you want to answer that. You can be dodgy, right, which is probably going to make them more suspicious. You can simply be upfront and be like, nah, man, I'm good. Nah, I quit drinking. That shit was poison. It was killing me. Nah, man, I drank too much last week, made an ass of myself. I don't want to do that anymore, so I'm good. Hey, you know what? I'm on a mission. I got things I want to do with my life. Alcohol isn't making that happen for me. I've just decided to step away from it for a while. There's a lot of different responses that you can have, but it's up to you to choose which one feels the best for you, right? You're in a conversation at a networking event, and everybody's got a beer in their hand, and somebody's like, oh, man, have you tasted this beer? Try it. Nah, you know, I'm good. I'm just not drinking tonight. More than likely, especially at a networking event, they're going to be like, all right, cool. No big deal. Now, that response could change if everyone's standing around at a bar and they're all doing shots. Oh, come on, man, just have one. No, man, I'm good. I got this thing I got to do in the morning. Or you'd be like, nah, I gave it up. Or, hey, you know what? I'm I'm in sobriety. I'm seeking long-term recovery. I'm good. You could say that too. It took me some time to get comfortable just being up front and telling people, "Nah, man, I'm sober." I did that for like 20 years, in fact, and I just decided it wasn't for me anymore. And I would leave it at that. I mean, that was literally my response to the people that were sort of in my world, because I was still doing red carpet interviews and some stand-up here and there. So I would see people who'd seen me blacked out, and I'd be like, "Nah, you know." Honestly, man, I spent 20 years in that world, and it was just enough is enough. It was just time to clean up. See, it's very different for the normies, right, who just have one or two and can just take it or leave it, versus those of us where, like, it hits our lips and we're Frank the Tank and we're streaking up through the quad to the gymnasium. Like, and some people don't get it. And if you start telling your horror stories, like, "Oh, man, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm not drinking tonight. Come on, man, just have one." "Look, dude, this one time I got butt ass wasted. I stripped all my clothes off. I peed all over the bar. Next thing you know, I'm out in the middle of the street. I'm defecating on myself, and I got dragged to the police station, you know, and that was just really embarrassing." Like, I don't have that story. I never once stripped my clothes off, peed on a bar, and defecated on myself in public. I do not have that story. I prefer to keep those in private, apparently. But my point being is, like, nobody needs to hear that story, guys. Co-workers don't need to hear that story. Fellow students and classmates don't need to hear that story. You know, telling that, again, it's, you got to pick and choose where you tell your truth, and you have to decide what you want your truth to be to various people. You know, if you're out on a first date, second date, and you're like, "Yeah, I don't drink," they might want to know why. And depending on how comfortable you feel in being vulnerable in that moment and sharing those details, you want to know how you're going to be able to respond to that, right? There's a couple different points I can make here. You're going to want to understand where your personal boundaries and your personal privacy is. What is that line? Does that line change and shift based off of whether they're a distant cousin or whether they're a closer relative? You know, are they your children or your husband or your wife? That is going to dramatically decide how much information this person is going to be allowed to get from you, you know, just through normal conversation. Because, like Brené Brown says, the number one way out of shame is vulnerability. But we have to realize that the barista at Starbucks doesn't need to know your whole story in the 3 minutes while you give them your order and they make your double mocha chocolaca, triple pumped cappuccino. Like, a majority of people do not need to know the horror stories. You can just simply say, "Yeah, you know, I swam in those waters for quite a long time, and I just realized that it wasn't for me anymore, and I've just decided to move on with my life." You can hold on to some level of privacy. It's not lying to somebody when they ask you why you don't drink anymore and you don't dive into all of your trauma and suffering. And it's really important that you denote within yourself that, again, if somebody's like, "Hey, man, I'm missing 10 bucks out of my wallet," and you stole 10 bucks out of their wallet, okay, you don't lie about that. Be upfront and say, "Yeah, man, I took the 10 bucks out of your wallet. I'm sorry. Here's the 10 bucks back. Let's remedy this situation." Versus somebody, you know, random in your life offering you a drink and you saying no and feeling like you're lying to them if you don't tell them why you're sober. Not everybody is worthy of your truth. Not everybody is worthy of your heart. You want to be able to choose how you are disclosing this information. And you want to be selective, because you start to share your drunk stories with people who are not prepared for those stories, it could go sideways on the quick, especially if they're coworkers or classmates or you're in some sort of professional capacity, right? They may not understand addiction to the depths that we do. There's a lot of stories I tell you guys on this show. Honestly, I don't care if they get out or I wouldn't put them on a podcast. I tell a lot of these stories literally on stages in front of people who might think I'm batshit crazy. That's them, right? I'm getting paid to do this speaking engagement. This is me. This is my truth. I always, you know, I'm bringing inspiration and I'm bringing a lesson to it. So by the end of it, most people are like, dude, what a freaking insane life you've lived and what you've been able to accomplish. This has been pretty amazing. But even when I speak at meetings, I don't do that 55 minutes of horror story crap and in the last 5 minutes say, but hey, it works if you work it, so keep coming back. Oh, no, no. People don't need my horror stories because we all have our own. So when I'm talking to other addicts, I don't need to sit there and share war stories. It's not helping. I'd rather share sobriety stories and ways that I've been able to figure out this life. And when it comes to the normies, there's going to be a stigma, whether we like it or not, around addict. There's going to be a picture they have in their mind about what addiction means. And that social stigma at work or at school or anywhere that's a professional capacity, hell, even at your family reunion, that can be to your detriment. That, again, whether we like it or not, could lead to gossiping, shaming, and rallying. And what we're looking for is people to support us in our early stages of sobriety and recovery. Hell, we're looking for people to support us throughout our entire journey. And there are going to be those people who are going to be embracing of the stories. But again, I'm not telling my war stories a majority of the time, just simply because it's not necessary. And I certainly don't want to come off as somebody who's romanticizing about those. But I'm not going to bullshit y'all. I had a blast being wasted. I did. It is a huge bummer that I blew off a chance to be a sports broadcaster, to work at ESPN. God knows how many different opportunities I wasted in Los Angeles with stand-up and the news anchor gig and the red carpet stuff. Like, I can't even, I have, my brain probably couldn't even make up all of the opportunities that I set on fire and just handed over to addiction. That's the part that destroys me and burns me up inside the most. But the partying and looking back at all the times that I've laughed and the keg stands and all that silly crap that I did, I'm not going to sit here and lie to myself and say I didn't enjoy those things. I did enjoy those. But it came to a point where I wasn't getting those memories anymore. My back end of my addiction in Los Angeles was just a lot of me drinking alone and trying to hide it from people. I wasn't at Ball State anymore. I wasn't at Valencia anymore. I definitely wasn't at University of Florida anymore. Well, I was trying to relive moments that were long gone. And I had a blast in my 20s doing those things. But it became more and more sad and depressing and honestly pathetic in my 30s. To the point where it's like, seriously, you pissed your bed again. You woke up in a bathtub of death again. You're out there looking for your car. You lost your keys in Hollywood. You stumbled home without sandals on. And now you're climbing through your damn roommate's window again. Like, what the frick, man? Like, I've been arrested, you know, plus or minus somewhere in that 10 to 15 times range, all for like urinating on buildings and silly stuff. And it's like, at some point, I just can't be that dude anymore. And I tell you all of these things because I'm not going to tell these stories to just some random person that I meet who asks me, oh, what do you do for a living? Oh, yeah, I run this cool sobriety and recovery company. I got this podcast. I'm writing this book. I'm becoming a therapist. It's going to be super awesome. Oh, wow, you don't drink anymore. Why is that? Man, I just swam in that pool for 20 years and realized it was killing me. That's it. I'm good. They don't need to know horror stories, right? Most people are not even going to be like, oh, come on, tell me your most ridiculous story. No. Just no. And I want you to feel comfortable in your own skin, not feeling like you owe anybody a story, like you owe anybody an explanation. Like for some reason, just because they've asked, you now have to pour your heart out to them. Because you don't have to pour your heart out to them. If something is on your criminal record and you're being asked in a job interview about it and it's something that you have to disclose, then you can practice different ways of saying it that don't paint you in such a corner if it's something that, you know, other people would not understand considering the circumstances. But generally, if somebody asks you a question about your past, about why you don't longer drink, to dive straight into horror stories, it shows to me a level of healing that still needs to occur, an inability to filter some of that stuff. And again, We're not lying. We're not trying to intentionally deceive anyone. You told somebody you're sober. You told somebody, hey, man, I just don't want to drink tonight. Why is that? I'm good, man. I got this. I got some cool stuff at the beach plan. I got this cool thing, you know, with manatees tomorrow. I just really want to kick it and do that. And I definitely don't want to be waking up with an inkling of poison in my body. Person can't take that as an answer, then you might just want to exodus the situation, honestly. It's, you don't owe anybody anything when it comes to an explanation for why you choose to live your life the way you do. There are plenty of people living their life to an extreme, right? We can think about those, you know, what are some subgroups that get punked on for living extreme lives? Preppers. So I work with this company that helps people get prepared, and a lot of people call them a prepper company. Like everybody's living underground in a, you know, in a, one of those bungalows. No, it's not a bungalow. A bungalow is like something that would be in a rainforest. Anyways, one of those underground things, bomb shelters. We'll just go with that for the sake of just moving the show forward, right? They think all preppers are living underground like they're from that TV show where they've got all this, you know, they're eating everything out of a jar and going to the bathroom in a bucket in the corner. No, that's not how a majority of those people think or are. And if somebody wants to do that, hey, man, more power to you. You go live your life. Live your life to the fullest. Live your life congruently the way you want to live it. And just seek not to hurt other people in the process. That would be the promise I would hope you could make to the rest of humanity. Any more than, you know, some people are, you know, completely liberal on the other side. And they want to live a very extreme life in that regard. Hey, man, you do you. Just realize that not everybody's going to agree with that. We all get to have our own opinions on life in general. I just realize that with freedom of speech comes freedom of consequence. And whenever you go out there and you start speaking your truth to everybody, you leave yourself up for ridicule, up for debate. And maintaining relationships and having people misunderstand you, perhaps there's that prejudice, that stigmatization. That stuff could haunt you. And if what you're looking for is support, then telling everybody at work that you've gotten sober and maybe they knew that you were a heavy drinker, you can leave it at that. Let them make up whatever they want to in their head. You don't have to go telling them your war stories. A simple, you know what, it was just messing with my life. I've decided to prioritize my family or my career or my health. We all know this shit's poison. What was once our medicine became our poison. I want you to live in the present. I want there to be growth and progress in your life. Right? What achievements, what goals do you have that you want? And recounting your past struggles and your suffering and your pain and your horror stories to every Tom, Dick, and Harry who rolls around isn't going to necessarily get you that empathy or sympathy. And if it does, it might come in the form of pity. And you may not want that either. Right? You want to feel empowered. You are the creator of your life. I am the coach in your life. There are those people out there who will challenge you. But when you find somebody living in that victim mentality, then they're looking for a hero and they're trying to run from the evil perpetrator. You get to control your narrative. You have personal agency over what you share with people. You can be authentic in representing yourself to people that you meet or people that you've known for a long time. You can be authentic and not have to give them every little nuanced reason for why you no longer want to consume alcohol or drugs or whatever your process addiction is. And if those people are the ones who you used to party with, they may not get it. And they might peer pressure you because the last thing they want to see is the crab get out of the bucket. Because there's that, I don't know if you remember that metaphorical story I told you, but if you've ever seen crabs in a bucket, inevitably one of them's trying to get out of the bucket. And if he might be able, or she, I don't know how that works with crabs, so let's just be non-gender specific in case anybody cares about that stuff when it comes to crabs. So the crab's trying to climb up the bucket, and if it is lucky enough to get its claw over the ledge, other crabs will begin to pull it back down. This is a real thing. It's totally what crabs do. I'm not really sure why, but the going theory is because if one crab gets out of the bucket, all the other crabs have to look around and say, well, why are we still in this bucket? And that's how it's going to be with people who are normal drinking buddies, normal drugging buddies, normal process addiction buddies. And all of a sudden they see you getting out of the bucket. Well, that can't be happening. They don't want to look at themselves in the mirror and think, well, shit, if Jesse can get sober and that dude was a freaking apocalypse whenever he drank and did drugs, if he can do it, what's wrong with me? Why am I not able to do it? Okay, well, let's just not let this happen. It's one of the reasons I didn't tell anybody I was sober until I hit month 6. By that time, I had already planted my flagpole in that ground. I had built the trust with myself. I had created supportive environments in my sobriety and recovery meetings at Kaiser Permanente with the close friends who were the ones, in many cases, begging for me to get sober. So they were some of the first ones I told. You get to choose your narrative. You get to create your own safe spaces. You get to be the one who chooses what you share so that you can either be focused on the present and the future or relive in the past. And for those clients who are like, yeah, but I just feel like I'm lying to people, then that's a question you get to ask yourself is why do you feel like it's lying to somebody simply because you don't want to tell them every single reason for why you're sober now? They don't need that. Any more than I need every single reason why somebody left one job for another. You do you. What makes you happy? Go for it. Because I'm not living with you in your head. I'm not there every single second of your life. And somebody trying to tell you, nah, man, you can figure it out. Come on, just figure out a way to have one or two. Or just figure out a way to live on that income. Or just figure out a way to live in that relationship. And then that person gets to go off and continue doing their life. And you're the one over here who has to live with the life you've chosen. It's important that you make decisions that feel good for you. And again, having said everything I've said, and I'm definitely getting you out of here on this, if you feel like you just have to tell every single person who asks you why you don't drink or why you don't attend that social function or you don't go to that one place anymore because that's where you used to party. If you feel like you got to tell every single one of those people all of your horror stories and your pains and your traumas and your sufferings, and that makes you feel good about your journey, then go for it. Because I'm not there with you. I don't know how these people are interpreting that information. But I do know that the more you share, the more you open yourself up for ridicule and stigmatizations and prejudices and misunderstandings. And it's imperative that you don't feel any more negative emotions about yourself than you already probably do in early stages of sobriety. And even now, coming on 7.5 years, I still don't like to feel shitty about myself. So I pick and choose. And yeah, it's not too hard. If somebody wants to know the real truth about me, I got damn near 300 episodes about it. They can figure out enough, right? But in, you know, that new restaurant job I got, yeah, I tell people I'm an addiction recovery counselor. Yeah, I'm sober. I party for 22 years. I hear these people talking about cocaine and ecstasy and MDMA and mushrooms. And they're sitting all over here sharing all their fun stories and laughing about, oh yeah, I went to that one festival last year and I did all this. And they're sitting here comparing different kinds of drugs. And I just sit there and listen to them. I remember being that age in my 20s, sharing my drug stories, thinking they made me cool. I remember it. I don't need to sit there and tell them that they shouldn't be doing that stuff. I shouldn't be sitting there trying to share my horror stories, you know, which at the time were probably, you know, more of congratulatory stories, right? Back then, it wasn't horror stories. Back then, it was like, yeah, listen to all the stuff I've done. Look at all the parties I've been to. Look at all the drugs and alcohol I've consumed. Aren't I cool? You know, that was my perception of it in my 20s, and it certainly had shifted by my late 30s when my 40s rolled around and was like, dude, do you want to die in your bathtub or do you want to live a life that actually means something? Everybody comes to this point at some stage in their lives where they have to make the decision. Do they continue down the path that they've always been going down, or do they make a radical shift in order to achieve something that they never thought possible? Some people don't choose the right fork in the road, and that breaks my heart for them. But I can't force them down this pathway. I can't drag horses to water and force them to drink. Horses are fucking strong. Addictions are strong. The person has to want it. They have to fight through the cravings. They have to drive themselves harder than they've ever driven themselves before to not listen to the limbic system, to not listen to the emotional mind, to fight through that trigger activation warning that says, hey, we've been here before, and our best way through this is absolutely intoxicated. We got to push ourselves in ways that other people don't necessarily understand if they have not too been at that depths of despair. And trying to share that with someone, you know, over, you know, some small talk when you just sat down at a table with a bunch of people who, you know, maybe you know two or three, but you don't know the rest of them. Like, you just pick and choose, man. I'm telling that to you all, that if, especially when it comes to how you can feel good about yourself, if somebody's seen you drinking and all of a sudden you're not anymore, it is more than okay to be like, you know what? I'm good now. Yeah, I got too much going on in my life right now. I'm on a mission. That was the mantra I taught one of my clients recently. I'm on a mission. Make that your mantra. I'm on a mission. And your mission could be a successful career. It could be, you know, 5-bedroom, 17-bathroom house. It could be a loving family. It could be losing 30 pounds. Whatever your mission is, that's your why. Use that why to drive you toward that which you absolutely can attain if you're willing to put in the sacrifices for it. And maybe you tell people the heartwarming stories of why sobriety has meant so much to you. All the things you've been able to accomplish now because you no longer wake up with a hangover anymore. I would rather be telling people those stories than telling people my horror stories. Hey man, you want to drink tonight? Nah man, I'm good. Right? That simple sentence, nah man, I'm good. If they want more, if they want to start peppering you, you know, it's up to you to decide how emotionally surged you get about that. You can be like, look, man, I told you I'm good. What part of I'm good don't you understand? You can choose to be, to respond that way if you want. It's definitely going to draw some ire from people, and they might be very confused as to why you chose that kind of emotional response. So I wouldn't recommend that one either. But I think I've made my point here, is that you can just simply say, nah, man, I'm good. You know, I'm chilling. I got things I got to do tomorrow, right? And if you happen to see that person 7 days and every single day you say, nah, man, I'm good. I got some stuff to do tomorrow, right? Eventually they'll get the hint and they'll stop offering it. But not everybody needs your truth. Not everybody even wants your truth. A lot of times it's just social decorum and etiquette that says, let's offer this person a drink. Doesn't mean that they want to have you drink their booze. It doesn't mean that they care if you drink their booze. Doesn't matter if they care if you go up to the bar and order your own drink. A lot of times it's just etiquette and social decorum. We've walked into an establishment that sells booze. You should go up to the bar and get booze. That's why I love my drink. What is it? Soda water, no ice, no straw, no fruit. Just walking around with a glass of soda water. I call it my clear beer because it's got the bubbles. When I first got sober, my mind was like, man, you need something with a little bit more texture to it than just water. And soda water was there. And I was like, this is it. This provides it for me. And now 7.5 years in, I'm good. You know, I'm chilling with it. I've moved beyond having to explain myself. But in those early stages, you might feel like you have to explain yourself. And I hope this episode has given you some ideas on how you can respond in those situations rather than react. You be confident in you. You make the decisions that are comfortable for you. Be congruent to your values. Everybody else is off in their own little world where they're the center of their own universe. And it's like old school back in the day when humanity thought that the sun went around the earth, when in fact it's the other way around. Inside all of our minds, we are the sun and everything else is revolving around us. It's not the way that it is. We are not the center of the universe. Most people don't honestly give two shits about the intricacies of your life. I hate to break it to you, but they're all inside their own heads, worried about themselves. Even the person who loves you the most is still inside their head trying to figure out their life way more often than they're concerning themselves with your life. Even parents who will sit there and say, no, my kids are the most important thing, yada, yada, yada. You can see those ones who can live a balanced life, who know when it's time to step back and give their kids some breathing room, go out and get themselves a jog on, go out and hit the gym, go out and do something that revitalizes themselves versus just sacrifice, sacrifice, sacrifice. At some point in your life, whether you learn it today or whether you learn it years down the road, you'll realize that if you keep sacrificing yourself in order to seem or appear like somebody else in front of other people, you're just wearing a mask and nobody ever gets to actually experience the real you. And that, my friends, is the true injustice that you are now perpetrating upon yourself, is that you don't get to be the real you. And that's what sobriety and recovery wants you to be, the real you. Authentic, loving, kind, whatever you choose for it to be. But it does not have to come with a series of horror stories to justify why you've chosen sobriety and recovery as your new life mission. It doesn't. Be authentic, be loving, be caring, be supportive to others. I hope that you're surrounding yourselves with people who will also do those things to you and know when it's time to share and when it's time to say, nah, man, I'm just good. As always, my friends, inclusivity over exclusivity, the power of positive energy, release and flow. Every day is the best day of our lives when we wake up sober. Sober, sober. Did I say sober? I meant sober. Shout out to Sunshine and Robert. As always, my friends, glow on. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.